Dina Diamond, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Isn't it lovely that you can always have someone to remind you how outraged you are?
Yeah, because I'd forgotten.
It's outrageous itself.
Which is outrageous, but that's another whole subject. No, it makes me completely mad.
I do actually agree with you.
You know, why? Why are we being selfish? You know, I ran past, actually I walked, they ran, past people yesterday.
There was still speed on some direction.
Yeah, and I wanted to, you know, and I thought to myself, do I go and shout at people? And I thought, you know, I can't be the neighborhood monitor. I'm not walking around, I am absolutely not walking around, shouting at people, but it's bloody selfish, if you'll excuse that horrible language.
Yeah, you know what the thing is? I was actually speaking to a friend of mine in New York, and I think the problem is in South Africa, especially maybe in Joburg and potentially around Glen Hazel, is that it hasn't been as real because there aren't that many people affected in those areas. But the second that people around you and people you know are being affected, are actually getting the disease, are dying from it, then it actually becomes real and people become more cautious.
And Dina, watch this space. I happen to know that we should be watching this space.
I agree with you 100%. There's absolutely no question that it is going to escalate and escalate at a rapid rate.
It has already. It is starting. And my other concern is, and I did speak about this last week as well, is that we should not be keeping these things a secret. When people are infected with COVID-19, it is nothing to be ashamed about, unless, of course, you broke lockdown rules. And then you should hang your head a little bit in shame, but that's something different. We need to know about it. People need to know. They need to know if they were in contact with you. They need to know that it is real and that we need to be sensitive and aware of people around us. I was really quite horrified this weekend with what I saw. And I get it. I understand it. I'm losing my mind, not seeing people. But we just have to be, and I hate the masks. I can't breathe with these masks. As it is, I'm one of the world's worst athletes. I mean, how can I be expected to do this? But somehow we've just got to.
I've realized the cloth mask, don't wear cloth mask for running. Rather wear those ones that have got like that material, that like hard material. Those ones, at least, it's much easier.
So you're right. No, they don't stick to your nose. So yesterday, for the first time when I went on a walk, I used one of those, sort of like a surgical mask, a paper mask.
Yeah, yeah.
From China, which also irritated me that I'm supporting that. I don't know, I'm a bit irritable today. But I did find it a lot easier to use than
a cloth mask.
Dina, have we lost you there?
No, I'm back here.
Oh, there we go. Yes, so Karen says, I'm just having a problem breathing, actually feeling sick from it. I think it could, you know, especially driving. Yeah, well, if you're alone in the car, don't wear your mask. You know, I certainly wouldn't in those circumstances. Ansan says, Howard, I agree. People are selfish. Russell says, thanks for the comments. My sentiments. Exactly. Karen says, you are so right. It is, I just think that we just, maybe people aren't aware that you're not wearing a mask for yourself, that you're wearing it for people around you.
And also it's because so many people are asymptomatic. That is, they don't even necessarily know that they've got COVID.
100%. So the other thing we wanted to talk about, Dina, this morning is you sent me, and I had seen it before, an incredible video from Red Hill School where they take you through their protocols of cleaning and sanitizing their school and the process that they will go through. This is now a whole new area, a whole new market developing, isn't it?
100%. I mean, so there are a few things on this. So number one, the way that Red Hill has communicated as a school makes you think, wow, I mean, they're on top of their game. It actually makes parents feel comfortable that their kids are going to go back to school. But the level of cleaning that they have put into that school and the processes and the procedures, like, it just make you sit back and just go, wow.
Well, I was wondering if they can't offer that to people's homes, Red Hill. Like, if they could, you know, do that, apply that system to my house, I would be very, very happy with that. But no, incredible. So you're right. It's all about the communication from a Red Hill School perspective.
Absolutely. And not only that, but they create, so not only did they actually do it, they went, they obviously cleaned the school, all the schools have to be cleaned, but they did an entire video, which was so professionally done, it was just absolutely magnificent in terms of how they show the school grounds, they get a professional who's in professional cleaning, he talks to it, they show the people cleaning the desks in hazmat suits, and then they show what will happen going forward when school actually begins, and they roll out all the steps, and they create that level of comfort. So from a communication point of view, they get full marks. I mean, they were outstanding.
Incredible. And I feel that they obviously brought the kids in, put them in, you know, had them in their uniforms, and reenacted or enacted exactly how school is going to function. And I thought that was incredible.
Absolutely. So monkey see, monkey do.
Absolutely.
But what did sort of stand out as well is the level of germ contaminant, sort of cleaning makes you, and then at the end, they show you that the kids are actually going to have to walk through a tunnel and be sprayed by almost like a herbicide.
They took your advice, Howard.
Turning to me.
Remember you said, they should have those things that they have like at farms with animals.
Cattle dip.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Yes. Yes. His kids walk through a cattle dip. Okay, well not really, but I think it's amazing. But it is interesting how, you know, we never can really anticipate unintended consequences, and all of a sudden, the very positive spin on this is that it's also going to hygiene and this type of area, this whole segment of industry is going to start employing a lot more people, because you need more people in to clean offices or any high density area. And to some extent, I think that's quite incredible. Is not only is it going to employ people, but it's also going to change our level of hygiene wherever we are, because no, we're just not going to accept a poor level in places that we go to.
Absolutely. But then there's also sort of the converse of this is that, I mean, growing up with kids, you know, when your kids go to like nursery school or something, they all the time they're getting sick, and they like, cause they all that is, especially when it comes to winter, which is the time we're getting to now, and all the kids basically are breathing on each other. They get sick, they get better. As soon as they get better, they get sick. Mm. But it does build up a level of immunity, and it's something called the hygiene hypothesis, which is the concept of exposing people to germs at an early age to build the immunity. And what we're going to be taking away is all germs. So are we actually causing a problem for future generations, which we have to look at now? So, I mean, the normal germs, you know, there's a whole 5-second rule or 3-second rule. Everyone's got their own rules. Yeah. I've got a 0-second rule at the moment. No one can drop anything on the floor and put it anywhere near anywhere.
How about you burn it?
Yeah, just go straight absolutely into the furnace. So all of that sort of is now going away. There's no rule. There is a 0-second rule. The classrooms are going to be socially distanced. I don't know how they're going to do it, obviously, in the nursery schools and stuff like that. But in the classrooms, even in Red Hill, in that video, you see the desks are further apart. But how do you maintain that on a...
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, I can barely manage I was walking into the building here in the early part of this morning. It was about 5:30. There's absolutely nobody around, but I just felt I can't exactly complain to everybody else if I don't wear my mask even walking in here. And, it was just unpleasant for the 5 minutes from my car into studio to wear a mask. And I thought to myself exactly that is, how are these kids going to manage all day? I just can't imagine how difficult that's going to be.
I definitely don't know how they can wear a mask. I mean, as I say, like, also mine also irritates me. I wear my mask when I go walking every day, but it's annoying. Mm. It is annoying. Mm. And, I think from that point of view, I don't know how they're going to get kids. I mean, it's great in the video. It's wonderful. But in real life and in practice, our kids, their lunch break, they're going to have to eat. They're going to have to take their masks off. And then at that point, they're exposing each other again.
Yeah, it is very worrying, because as schools open up, these things are going to become more of a problem. But it is interesting, and I do need to put that question, the immunity question, to Dr. Anton Marburg. It's an important one to discuss. That said, we don't really have options at the moment. But the other thing that I find quite fascinating is we don't care what we spray ourselves with.
Exactly. So that's what I'm saying. We've gone from being, you know, the whole world is going organic and we're foraging natural vegetables from the gardens and all these wonderful things.
Yeah, now we just want to nuke it.
And all of a sudden we're willing to absolutely spray any chemical, any pesticide basically on us, on our clothing, in our house, on our surfaces, our children, and sending them through herbicide tunnels. I mean, obviously, you know, people were joking because obviously you talked about Agent Orange, right, which was used by the U.S. military in Vietnam. And that was to eliminate forest cover, basically. And that was done from 1961 to 1971. 20 million gallons of herbicides were sprayed over Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos. And there were some serious, serious side effects and birth defects and a whole bunch of health issues. And now I actually feel like, you know, when we were actually looking at the video, I was coming to some people who'd seen it, and they said, like, I don't understand the tunnel thing. I said, imagine you're a grape and you've just been sprayed by a copper sprayer.
Yeah.
So that is where we are.
Yeah. It's actually an incredible thing. And I wonder if parents are going to be asking these questions. What is in the herbicide that you're spraying? And that you have to wear a mask because it could irritate you, so you have to wear a mask when you walk through. Now, I'm sure it is safe. I have no doubt they've done their research.
No, but, I so agree it would be safe.
But it is so interesting that we are so worried about this one one virus that we kind of forget about everything else along the way.
Yeah, I mean, we'd moved away from, I mean, again, we also thought lead paint was fine for quite a while.
Yes,
we also thought lying in the sun with baby oil was
yes,
fine.
Yes, exactly.
And smoking.
Protection
smoking when you're
two.
Pregnant
yes.
And in front of children.
Yeah, that was all okay. So it's true, but it is really, really fascinating. Unsigned says, on the news, I heard an interview with a lady in a rural area. She said they are too scared to tell people around them if they are infected because of the stigma similar to AIDS. So that is interesting. It is interesting if there is that type of stigma. That said, certainly in the community, in the Jewish community, there isn't the same stigma in terms of AIDS, and there isn't that history. However, I still think that there is this tremendous reluctancy or nervousness to say if somebody has or if somebody's suffering from COVID-19. And I think that is deeply problematic, because then we don't realize just how real it is and just how close it is. And that to me is a big concern.
Absolutely, because as I say, like, the further away you think it is from you, the less vigilant you are yourself. So if you're going to go walking, you'll be like, it's not really pertaining to me. It's not in this area. I'm not going to wear my mask.
Mm.
So I think that's why people are becoming a little bit complacent. So in the beginning, everyone was like very panicked and they were home. And now people are like, I've had enough of being home. Cyril told us we're on level 3. It's going to be alcohol. 8 million people are returning to work. Public transport. So all of those are levels of relaxation. Ironically, in a time where the virus is ramping up and the numbers are ramping up and the cases are ramping up and the deaths are ramping up. So we actually, I think because we're such early adopters, our numbers obviously climbed very, very slowly in the beginning. But now when we are released, I should say, and we go into level 3, there's going to be a much higher spread because we actually haven't had the spread yet. So we should actually be being far more cautious than not cautious.
Yeah,
and I think globally, because it's already happened in reverse, that we think that we're on the same curve, but we're actually not there yet.
Yeah, and the question is when that's going to happen. Sorry, it's
not to increase the anxiety.
But. There was a hell of a but there.
I've been wondering, actually, how people react to people that they know have had COVID-19 but have now recovered. Do they believe that they've recovered? How do they act? Because, I mean,
I think those are the safest people.
Because
I talk to that herd immunity. And
yes.
And, like, are they safe? But nothing's conclusive yet. We don't know that if someone's had it, they can't have it again. And they will have some level of antibodies. But are they safe?
Yeah, so we now know, so we know that they are for a while. We don't know how long that will be. That seems to be the current medical view, is that you can't get it a second time, that the reports of people did get it a second time aren't particularly conclusive. So what they are saying is that at the moment, there is the assumption it doesn't look like you can get it again. So those actually are the safest people. I mean, that's what I would hope for is one, you know, when the antibody test comes and, you know, you go for it and say, oh my gosh, I've had it.
Yeah, because my thing, I think the main question is, because of the stigma now around people that have it, is there still that stigma when you have recovered?
Well, there shouldn't be stigma at all. It's like having...
I agree.
Yeah, of course.
You know, chicken pox.
Yeah.
You know, so you've had it. That's great. You know, no one says, you know, oh, yeah, I had chicken pox when I was a kid. Oh, I'm embarrassed. You know, it's just something you had.
Yeah.
And maybe that is part of the problem, that people just don't want to talk about it. And it really does concern me, that there is this feeling that we need to keep it quiet. And I think more so it's dangerous. And of course we don't need to name names, and we don't need to have, you know, be announcing details on the show or any other environment about people that are ill with it. But we do need to know if it's close, and if members of our community have it, or you know, that we need to be a little bit more cautious at different times and less cautious. It's
absolutely.
Do you know how are you feeling about sending your kids back to school?
Sure. I literally vacillate on this one continuously, because on one hand, like, you know, I think they're home in our little cocoon and they're learning beautifully, and I mean, I'm teaching a lot, but I'm actually very happy with them at home. But on the other hand, I know that they all really want to see their friends, and socially they're feeling a bit isolated. So I think, like, as long as there are the right protocols put in place, and the school has to communicate it. I think communication here is absolutely, absolutely key. And I think people do want to actually see it, because when you see it, you do believe it. And I think that also there's that whole phased approach. So I'm thinking, like, if, like, that my kids also won't be going in, like, right away. So I know people who do have kids going back on the 1st of June who are very, very anxious. It's on every single mother's group. It's on every single school group. People are debating backwards and forwards. Some people are saying that they can't wait for their kids to go back to school, but that's very much, I think, in the minority.
Most people are very concerned. You know, I think what we saw in Israel was people couldn't wait for the kids to go back to school. We're chatting to Adina Diamond. We're talking all things COVID and marketing, and also, I don't know, we've gone also on the in all sorts of directions, but that's okay. That's what we do. Jenny says, how does one know if one's been exposed to a person carrying COVID-19 if we don't name names?
Well, that is right. Listen, that's why they've got the apps overseas where they actually are tracing. So if someone's been infected, they trace all the people they've been in touch with, all the places they've been to. So that is important. It's absolutely a critical part of it. And that's why they do it overseas. And that's why there isn't that stigma, I think, overseas. I think it's just very much here.
And just to add to that, in Israel, what they did was, I know that even the rabbis announced that you should leave your cell phone on a Shabbat, because you might get an SMS to say you've been in contact with somebody that's COVID positive. Please go for a test, or please isolate. So that is how the system worked, and that I believe, which is that helped it work successfully. Interesting, when Gary Sweden came back from the United States, he was one of our earlier cases here in South Africa who was COVID positive. He isolated, he went into quarantine, and spoke very openly about it. We spoke to him on the show a number of times. And what I found there was that was so incredibly helpful. By being open about it, there was no stigma. And why should there be? Why should there have been a stigma? He went to an event in the United States. That's where he picked it up. He certainly, there's nothing to feel or be guilty about. And his information was very helpful to our listeners, certainly to me, and I would hope that people would do the same. But look, I guess there are ethical issues around disclosing people's conditions, which you simply can't do, I imagine.
Yeah, and now I think there's a problem also with the schools that are complaining about that as well, because there are kids who are supposed to go back to school who may be immunodeficient and have issues with the immune systems. And now before that was maybe confidential, and now the schools are saying that they have to, parents have to disclose it, because otherwise your kid's obviously not going to be sort of seem to be in a safe environment. So it's a lot of issues that are coming out of this, a lot of issues in terms of communication.
It's so much though part of the age that we're living in that everything ultimately gets, all our cards get turned facing up. Is that we don't no longer live in an age where you think you can behave in a certain way without somebody seeing it or recording it or even looking at something online and it's not being recorded by Google, etc. We are living in an age more and more where everything is very simply known, including some of the things that we held very, very dear in terms of our own privacy. Suddenly our medical information and our medical records become very relevant to people around us. It is so interesting.
Yeah, but what is also interesting is that people get outraged if their information is shared or some stuff, personal information about them, and you've got the Poppy Act and all of that to protect people, so the protection of personal information. The companies are no longer just about allowed to market to you. They're no longer about to send you stuff to call you unless you have, what they call, opted in. Before it used to be you have to opt out, now you have to actually opt in. And what's really funny, I find, is when people put all their entire life story on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter and then get outraged that someone else knows something about them.
Yeah, especially, I mean, yeah, back at Linksfield Clinic again. Ask me why.
It.
Yeah,
oh, and then, terrible and then, day I had.
How, exactly, and how dare you. Dina Diamond, this is unfortunately where we have to leave it. It is 8:30. 7. Great at chatting to you as always. I'm Howard Feldman.